तपाईं एसपीएस नेपालीको साथमा हुनुहुन्छ।
You're listening to SBS Nepali podcast. My colleague Abhas Parajuli sat down with opposition leader Angus Taylor to discuss Nepal's ongoing flood crisis and the federal government's relief efforts. Warning, this content may be distressing for some listeners.
Angus Taylor, welcome to SBS Nepali. G'day and namaste.
Good to be with you. Namaste.
First of all, what's your message for Australian Nepali community and the families of Australians who have been affected by the recent natural disaster in Nepal?
Well, it's obviously been a terrible tragedy, and my heart bleeds for those families who have been affected. It is a difficult time. We know that. I made a point of going to see a number of members of the Nepalese community in southwestern Sydney, where my electorate is, to grieve with them about what is going on. But we also stand ready to work with the government to do whatever we possibly can in the recovery and the redevelopment that has to follow in order to get Nepal and the region back on its feet and help Nepalese and Nepalese Australians recover from what's been a really tragic event.
So you've just mentioned that you've spoken to a few members of the community. What do they want?
Well, I think the first thing they want is recognition that this has been a really tough time. I think secondly, the Nepalese Australian community are obviously proud Australians as well as proud of their Nepalese heritage, and they want to be embraced by other Australians, and I sent that message very strongly. But I also think they want to know that the Australian government and Australian leaders stand ready to support them in any way that is necessary. And these are difficult recoveries, and expertise from other countries can often help in order to achieve the outcomes that need to be achieved.
We heard earlier today that some drone specialists are being deployed to Nepal. Australia has a significant number of Nepali-speaking nurses and other healthcare professionals like hydro engineers and early childhood educators. Would you help deploy them to ease pressure on Nepali healthcare workers and other professionals in Kathmandu?
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. I think the real question is how can we help? And of course, there has to be organisation to make that possible. But whether it's emergency service workers, healthcare workers, civil engineers, as you say, they'll need to be building expertise and planning, of course. I think these are all areas where we should be looking to provide any support we reasonably can. And I strongly support that process. I mean, I've watched Nepal develop over recent decades. I was privileged enough to go to Nepal a long time ago. It was the first place where I went overseas as a young Australian at the age of 18. I went to Kathmandu and to the mountains, and I was struck by the generosity the wonderful nature of the Nepalese people, and I've treasured that visit ever since. But I know there's been an enormous amount of development since then, in the 40 years since then. And we want to make sure Nepal can get back on its feet and get going again.
And what would you have done differently if you're in the government today and in your response to this crisis and your support? Is there anything differently you would have done?
These are the sorts of circumstances where we should seek to be as bipartisan as we possibly can. We don't want partisan politics interfering with this. The government is in a better position than we are to understand what is needed. We'll obviously watch closely, and if there hasn't been an adequate response, we'll seek to deal with that. But so far, at this point, we just want to support the government, play any role we can to ensure that the recovery goes on as quickly and as effectively as possible.
On that note, on one hand, as we have been saying, the majority of Australian community coast to coast are coming together to pay tribute to those who have lost their lives and to stand with the families affected. But others in the community, including some in the political leadership in this nation, are busy word mongering and dog whistling while using Nepal crisis as a political football. What do you have to say to people who think aid to Nepal at this hour of need is not good use of taxpayers' money?
No, I think that's totally inappropriate. I mean, we have a wonderful Nepalese-Australian community, and I know Nepal's development has delivered a lot of prosperity for a lot of people, and we want to see more of it. So I think we should be supportive of that, and I don't support any of that kind of dog whistling or carry on. It's not Australian. It's not how we behave. We are a country that embraces others, and I know the Nepalese community have fitted in extremely well with Australia. They understand our values, and they love our country, and that is a great thing, and we should support them in their time of need.
The Nepali Prime Minister Balendra Shah linked last week's flooding to climate change and called for global action, with the Chinese government also linking the flooding to climate change. Do you think Australia and other industrialized nations are doing enough to support countries like Nepal, which are facing severe consequences, as we've seen, from the rising temperature?
This can get very political, and I don't think it's the right time to politicize these issues. We can have a long debate about what we think the right solution to that problem is, and I firmly believe Australia has more than done its share in that area. I think what is appropriate is to look at what caused this, how we prevent it, and how we get the fastest possible recovery from it.
And what I'm also hearing from the climate and water scientists in Nepal, I was talking to them last evening, is that there's a mistrust among the larger nations about sharing data. Is this something Australia should lead and facilitate in the Asia-Pacific region?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what data it is you're referring to, but, you know, we should be working with countries like Nepal to enable them to do the best they possibly can to deliver to their own citizens and better outcomes for them. That helps all of us. But I'm not exactly sure what data it is you're referring to.
Yeah, it's all glacial data, the melting data, the temperatures, and, you know, the using high-resolution satellites and everything, because it's in a geopolitical sensitive region as well. I think that is where my question was leading to. Like, is that something that Australia should be playing active role in getting India and China together, focus more on the safety of people and everybody?
Well, I think if sharing data is going to help, of course we should consider it. But as I say, I mean, I think there will be a period where people are looking at what caused this, how it could have been mitigated and prevented, and that's absolutely appropriate. But we shouldn't jump to conclusions on that either.
Sure thing. And do you think Australia has a moral responsibility to kind of support displaced Nepali people in the region, including through temporary visas, family reunification here in Australia, and other appropriate measures? What do you think government should be doing in this sector?
Well, I haven't seen any proposals along those lines. I mean, I think the first priority has to be to help people in Nepal to get back on their feet and get their lives back together. And, of course, that is the most important thing. We obviously have, you know, a strong refugee program here in this country, and it's used in an appropriate way, and we've done that very well over a long period of time. But we'll look at any sensible proposals. But as I say, at this point, I haven't seen anything along those lines.
And what should be Australia's approach in terms of long-term support in risk management and early warning systems for countries like Nepal?
Well, I mean, I think we have a long history of learning a lot about and building real expertise in emergency management. We obviously have a long history in this country of floods and fires, not necessarily events exactly the same as this, because we don't have the rugged mountainous terrain of Nepal, but we have deep experience in emergency services. And I think that is an area where we should always be looking to work with other countries around the world.
Will a coalition government reconsider its approach to climate change as disasters like these become more the norm?
Well, can I say, I mean, I think the important thing is for Australia to do its bit. I've long believed that the pathway to mitigation of emissions is low-cost technologies, because asking countries like Nepal to adopt high-cost technologies when they're relatively poor compared to us is inappropriate. And I think those technologies are emerging, and the faster they emerge, the better. But I also think there's a degree of adaptation that will need to happen inevitably. I think everyone accepts that, and we should be looking to work with countries to achieve that in a reasonable way.
You're listening to SBS Nepali's conversation with opposition leader Angus Taylor. We will be back after this short break.
Yeah, turning to domestic affairs, we have been vocal about reducing tobacco excise. The government does not seem to give a hoot about it. Can you explain your rationale to our audience?
We have an illegal tobacco industry, which is 80% of the tobacco market. I mean, it's extraordinary and rising. So nearly all of the tobacco sales in this country are illegal, and they're funding organised crime, criminal gangs, up to $7 billion of funding for criminal gangs supported by government policy. The government policy has failed. It has effectively driven up smoking rates, but importantly driven organised crime and taken away government revenues. So it's a complete failure. So what we've got to do is break the business models of the criminal gangs and the organised crime in this country, which is being funded by illegal tobacco. The way to do that is to bring down the excise by 80%. And then to smash the remaining illegal criminal businesses through law enforcement. And that's exactly what we propose to do. That will bring down the cost of legal tobacco to within parity of illegal tobacco. We expect to see that a big shift back to legal use of tobacco. And on the back of that, we can use law enforcement across state and federal levels to smash the criminal gangs. And that's what we must do. We must destroy their business models because they're rapacious. They're responsible for 200 arson events in Melbourne in the last three years. And there seems to be a new one every day, but we're seeing that right across Australia now as well.
And what do you say to your critics who have said you've come with this policy after One Nation started ball rolling the policy?
Well, that's just wrong. I mean, we've been working on this since February this year. I think One Nation got wind of the fact that we were working it up, but it's a complete package here that we're proposing. It's a significant reduction of the tobacco excise, it's regulation and taxation of vaping. It's a $200 million commitment to law enforcement and a $60 million commitment to reduce smoking levels. And this in combination, we think, can smash organised crime supported by illegal tobacco in this country, but can also ensure that we contain smoking in the country and we prevent an illegal market which is hurting young Australians.
And final one from me. What's your take on the ongoing migration and social cohesion debate in Australia, and how do you plan to provide confidence to millions of Australians who are not born here but have embraced Australia as their new home?
Well, I love people who come to this country and love our country. That's what we want to see more of. And I've seen it all my life, and I think it's a wonderful thing to see. It is a great privilege to become an Australian and an Australian citizen. Of course, I think people understand that, and we need to be careful about who we accept as a citizen of this great country and who we bring into the country, because they do have to be people who accept our core values. I think that is important. But I know many Nepalese, very many Nepalese Australians do love our country and do accept our core values. And that's the model of immigration that has been so successful for our country for so long, and long may it continue.
And that was opposition leader Angus Taylor speaking to my colleague Abhas Parazuli about Nepal's ongoing flood crisis and the federal government's relief efforts. And I am Dinita Rishal. And we would like to inform you that the views expressed in this conversation are solely those of the speaker, and SBS neither endorses nor opposes these views. Australians seeking emergency consular assistance are advised to contact the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade DFAT's 24-hour consular emergency centre on 1300 555 135, or from overseas on +61 2 6261 3305. Listeners seeking crisis support can contact Lifeline on 131114, Beyond Blue 1300 224636, Suicide Callback Service on 1300 659 467, and Kids Helpline on 1800 551 800 for young people aged up to 25. In an emergency, call 000. For more podcasts, follow SBS Nepali on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platforms. Or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X on SBS Nepali or SBS South Asian on YouTube. For more information, visit sbs.com.au/Nepali.
लाइक शेयर र कमेन्ट गर्नुहोस् एसपीएस नेपालीलाई फेसबुकमा साथ दिनुहोस्।